flower was offered to me on my pretty rose tree. A flower was offered, such a flower as was such a flower
as May never bore,
the month of May never bore. Therefore, unearthly flower, or at least an ethereal flower, or a non-attached flower, or not stuck, an unstuck flower. Flower in the air, I guess. A flower was offered to me, such a flower as May never bore. But I said, I've a pretty rose tree, and I passed the sweet flower o'er. Then I went to my pretty rose tree to tend her by day and by night. But my rose turned away with jealousy, and her thorns were my only delight. And her thorns were my only delight. A flower was offered to me, such a flower as May never bore. But I said, I've a pretty rose tree, and I passed the sweet flower o'er. Then I went to my pretty rose tree to tend her by day and by night. But my rose turned away with jealousy, and her thorns were my only delight. And her thorns were my only delight.
Hold it, hold it. Could you hear in the back the words? All the words?
All the S&M about, you know, the thorns and everything. Okay. Spring. Sound the flute. Now it's mute. Birds delight. Day and night. Nightingale in the dale. Lark in sky. Merrily, merrily, merrily. To welcome in the year. Merrily, merrily, 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 to welcome in the year. Little boy, full of joy. Little girl, sweet and small. Cock does crow, so do you. Merry voice, infant noise, merrily, merrily, to welcome in the year. 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 Little lamb, here I am. Come and lick my white neck. Let me pull your soft wool. Let me kiss your soft face. Merrily, merrily, to welcome in the year. 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 Does any
anybody have any particular preferences as to what poems I read now? What will we be doing? We have 5:20 or so. Read on till 6 or 6:15. Peter Orlovsky has a book of poems, so he'll read some too. Has anybody got any particular requests? Because I have all my... Wales Visitation, sure enough. Yeah. Written in the fifth hour of an LSD trip in the Black Mountains of Wales, Llanthony Valley, July 29th, 1967. Capalifan, you may know, is Eric Gill and a group of communards in the 20s had a work commune there where they did a lot of printing books, furniture making. And so there's a place called Capalifan there, a little chapel. Visitazione is the name of the peregrination that the Welsh bards used to make from valley to valley, telling who married the bill. Who married the pig's daughter, or what the latest gossip was. White fog lifting and falling on mountain brow, trees moving in rivers of wind, the clouds arise as on a wave, gigantic eddy lifting mist above teeming ferns exquisitely swayed along a green crag, glimpsed through mullioned glass in valley rain. Bardic, oh, self, visitazioni, tell naught but what's seen by one man in a vale in Albion, of the folk whose physical sciences end in ecology, the wisdom of earthly relations, of mouths and eyes interknit 10 centuries, visible orchard of mind language, manifest human, of the satanic thistle that raises its horned symmetry, flowering above sister, grass, daisies, pink, tiny bloomlets, angelicas, light bulbs. Remember, 160 miles from London's symmetrical thorned tower and network of TV pictures, flashing, bearded, yourself, the lambs on the tree nook hillside, this day, bleating, heard in Blake's old ear, and the silent thought of Wordsworth in eld stillness, clouds passing through skeleton arches of Tintern Abbey. Bard, nameless as the vast, babble to vastness. All the valley quivered, one extended motion, wind undulating on mossy hills, a giant wash that sank white fog delicately down red runnels on the mountainside whose leaf branch tendrils moved a sway in granitic undertow down and lifted the floating nebulous upward and lifted the arms of the trees and lifted the grasses an instant in balance and lifted the lambs to hold still and lifted the green of the hill in one solemn wave. A solid mass of heaven, mist-infused, ebbs through the veil, a wavelet of immensity lapping gigantic through Llanthony Valley, the length of all Britain, valley upon valley, under heaven's ocean, tunned with cloud hang. Roar of the mountain wind, slow, sigh of the body, one being on the mountainside stirring gently, exquisite scales trembling everywhere in balance, one motion through the cloudy sky floor, shifting on the million feet of daisies, one majesty, the motion that stirred wet grass, quivering to the furthest tendril of white fog, poured down through shivering flowers on the mountain's head. No imperfection in the budded mountain. Valleys breathe. Heaven and earth move together. Daisies push inches of yellow air. Vegetables tremble. Green grass shines. Sheep speckle the mountainside, revolving their jaws with empty eyes. Horses dance in warm rain. Tree-lined canals network through live farmland. Blueberries fringe stone walls on hawthorned hills. Pheasants croak on meadows haired with fern. Out, out into the hillside, into the ocean sound, into delicate gusts of wet air. Fall on the ground. Oh, great wetness. Oh, mother, no harm on your body. Stare close. No imperfection in the grass. Each flower Buddha-eyed, repeating the story, the myriad-formed soul. Kneel before the foxglove, raising green buds. Mauve bells droop doubled down the stem, trembling antennae, and look in the eyes of the branded lambs that stare, breathing, stock still, under dripping hawthorn. I lay down, mixing my beard with the wet hair of the mountainside, smelling the brown, vagina-moist ground, harmless, tasting the violet thistle hair, sweetness, one being so balanced, so vast, that its softest breath moves every floweret in the stillness on the valley floor. Trembles lamb hair, hung gossamer, rain beaded in the grass, lifts trees on their roots, birds in the great draft hiding their strength in the rain, bearing same weight. Groan through breast and neck, a great, oh, to earth heart, calling our presence together. The great secret is no secret. Senses fit the winds, visible is visible. Rain mist curtains wave through the bearded veil. Gray atoms wet the wind's Kabbalah. Cross-legged on a rock in dusk rain, rubber booted in soft grass, mind moveless. Breath trembles in white daisies by the roadside. Heaven breath and my own symmetric. Airs wavering through antlered green fern drawn in my navel. Same breath as breathed through Kapolei Fan. Sounds of Aleph and Aum through forests of gristle. My skull and Lord Hereford's knob equal. All Albion one. What did I notice? Particulars. The vision of the great one is myriad. Smoke curls upward from ashtray. House fire burned low. The night still wet and moody. Black heaven, starless, upward in motion with wet wind. That's about two-thirds exact as written at the time. And then the next night, a couple more phrases floated back in. Things like sheep speckle the mountainside, revolving their jaws with empty eyes, which is about the most accurate line in terms of actually, like, you can see that. And it also suggests something that's kind of uncanny, the fact that nobody's got a soul anyway, not even a sheep, especially if you're high on acid, to the empty eye. Those kind of lines are mostly written first impression, first thought, best thought. Tom has mentioned several times Sunflower Sutra. I think some of my poems are taught here in some class or other, and the likely ones would be Sunflower Sutra and Supermarket in California. So I'll read those, which are early poems. Berkeley, 1955. They're the text you would be most likely to run into if you're studying modern American poetry in anthologies. Sunflower Sutra. Sutra is suture, joining together. So sutra is a discourse, joining mind, usually used in Buddhist terminology, usually used a Buddhist sutra or a discourse or sermon by Buddha. Sunflower Sutra. I walked on the banks of the tin can banana dock and sat down under the huge shade of a Southern Pacific locomotive to look at the sunset over the Box House Hills and cry. Jack Kerouac sat beside me on a busted, rusty iron pole. Companion, we thought the same thoughts of the soul, bleak and blue and sad-eyed, surrounded by gnarled steel roots of trees of machinery. The oily water on the river mirrored the red sky. Sun sank on top of final San Francisco peaks. No fish in that stream. No hermit in these mounts. Just ourselves, roomy-eyed and hungover like old bums on the riverbank, tired and wily. Look at the sunflower, he said.
There was a dead gray shadow against the sky, big as a man, sitting dry on top of a pile of ancient sawdust. I rushed up and chanted. It was my first sunflower that I'd ever seen. Memories of Blake, my visions, Harlem, and hells of the eastern rivers. Bridges clanking Joe's greasy sandwiches. Dead baby carriages. Black treadless tires forgotten and unretreaded. The poem of the riverbank. Condoms and pots, steel knives, nothing stainless. Only the dank muck and the razor-sharp artifacts passing into the past. And the gray sunflower poised against the sunset, crackly, bleak, and dusty, with the smut and smog and smoke of olden locomotives in its eye. Coral of bleary spikes pushed down and battered like a broken crown. Seeds fallen out of its face, soon to be toothless mouth of sunny air. Sun rays obliterated on its hairy head like a dried wire spider web. Leaves stuck out like arms out of the stem. Gestures from the sawdust root. Broke pieces of plaster fallen out of the black twigs. A dead fly in its ear. Unholy, battered old thing you were, my sunflower. Oh, my soul, I loved you then. The grime was no man's grime, but death in human locomotives. All that dress of dust, that veil of darkened railroad skin, that smog a cheek, that eyelid of black misery, that sooty hand or phallus or protuberance of artificial worse than dirt, industrial, modern, all that civilization spotting your crazy golden crown, and those blear thoughts of death and dusty loveless eyes and ends and withered roots below in the home pile of sand and sawdust, rubber dollar bills, skin of machinery, the guts and innards of the weeping, coughing car, the empty, lowly tin cans with their rusty tongues. Alack, what more can I name? The smoked ashes of some cock cigar, the cunts of wheelbarrows and the milky breasts of cars, worn out asses out of chairs and sphincters of dynamos, all these entangled in your mummied roots. And you there standing before me in the sunset, all your glory in your form, a perfect beauty of a sunflower, a perfect, excellent, lovely sunflower existence, a sweet, natural eye to a new hip moon, woke up alive and excited, grasping in the sunset shadow, sunrise, golden, monthly breeze. How many flies buzzed round you, innocent of your grime, while you cursed the heaven of the railroads in your flower soul? Poor dead flower, when did you forget you were a flower? When did you look at your skin and decide you're an impotent, dirty old locomotive? The ghost of a locomotive, the specter and shade of a once powerful, mad American locomotive? You were never no locomotive, sunflower. You were a sunflower. And you, locomotive, you were a locomotive. Forget me not. So I grabbed up the skeleton-thick sunflower and stuck it up my side like a scepter and delivered my sermon to my soul and Jack's soul, too, and anyone who'll listen. We're not all skin of grime. We're not dread, bleak, dusty, imageless locomotive. We're beautiful golden sunflowers inside, blessed by our own seed and hairy, naked accomplishment bodies growing into mad black formal sunflowers in the sunset, spied on by our own eyes under the shadow of the mad locomotive riverbank sunset Frisco hilly tin can evening. Sit down, vision. Then two early poems written as part of the same inspiration, sitting around lonely in Berkeley a year later. One called A Strange New Cottage in Berkeley, and then in the original manuscript written down with a poem which is better known, Supermarket in California, but they're actually both part of the same sequence or same thought. So I'll read them both in sequence. A Strange New Cottage in Berkeley. All afternoon, cutting bramble blackberries off a tottering brown fence under a low branch with his rotten old apricots miscellaneous in the leaves, fixing the drip in the intricate gut machinery of a new toilet,
found a good coffee pot in the vines by the porch, rolled a big tire out of the scarlet bushes, hid my marijuana, wet the flowers, playing the sunlit water each to each, returning for godly extra drops for the string beans and daisies, three times walked round the grass and sighed absently. My reward, when the garden fed me its plums from the form of a small tree in the corner, an angel thoughtful of my stomach and my dry and lovelorn tongue. What thoughts I have of you tonight, Walt Whitman, for I walk down the side streets under the trees with a headache, self-conscious, looking at the full moon. In my hungry fatigue and shopping for images, I went into the neon fruit supermarket, dreaming of your enumerations. What peaches, what penumbras, whole families shopping at night, aisles full of husbands, wives in the avocados, babies in the tomatoes, and you, Garcia Lorca, what were you doing down by the watermelons? I saw you, Walt Whitman, childless, lonely old grubber, poking among the meats in the refrigerator and eyeing the grocery boys. I heard you asking questions of each. Who killed the pork chops? What price bananas? Are you my angel? I wandered in and out of the brilliant stacks of cans following you and followed in my imagination by the store detective. We strode down the open corridors together in our solitary fancy tasting artichokes, possessing every frozen delicacy, never passing the cashier. Where are we going, Walt Whitman? The doors close in an hour. Which way does your beard point tonight? I touch your book and dream of our odyssey in the supermarket and feel absurd. Will we walk all night through solitary streets? The trees add shade to shade, lights out in the houses. We'll both be lonely. Will we stroll dreaming of the lost America of love, past blue automobiles and driveways, home to our silent cottage? Ah, dear father, graybeard, lonely old courage teacher. What America did you have when Sharon quit poling his ferry and you got out on a smoking bank and stood watching the boat disappear on the black waters of Lethe? And later, is there any other thing I should put in? Any specific text that would be useful? Pardon me? Mugging. Okay, this is jumping then. No, that's fine. Jumping, that supermarket in California, and those poems are 1955. So, jumping to 20 years later, same station, different city, New York City. Mugging. Tonight, I walked out of my red apartment door on East 10th Street's dusk, walked out of my home, 10 years now, walked out of my honking neighborhood tonight at 7, walked out past garbage cans chained to concrete anchors, walked under black-painted fire escapes, giant cast-iron plate covering a hole in the ground where the workmen were building the new subway, crossed the street, traffic light red, 13 bus roaring by the liquor store, past the corner pharmacy, iron grated, past Coca-Cola and Milai massacre posters fading, scraped on brick, past Chinese laundry, wood doored, and broken cement stoop steps for rent, hall painted green and purple Puerto Rican style, along East 10th Street's glass spattered pavement, must be FBI plots. Walking past a taxi cab controlling the bottle-strewn curb, past young fellas with their umbrella handles and canes leaning against a ravaged Buick. And as I looked out at the crowd of kids on the stoop, a boy stepped up, put his arm around my neck, squeezed tenderly, I thought for a moment, squeezed harder, his umbrella handle against my skull, and his friends took my arm. A young brown companion tripped his foot against my ankle as I went down shouting, "Oh, my home!" to gangs of lovers on the stoop watching, slowly appreciating, "Why, this is a raid! These strangers mean strange business with what my pockets, bald head, broken-heeled bone leg, my soft shoes, my heart. Have they knives? Oh, my home! Have they sharp metal, wood to shove in eye, ear, ass, oh ma, home, and slowly reclined on the pavement, struggling to keep my woolen bag of poetry, address, calendar, and Leary lawyer notes hung from my shoulder, dragged in my neat Orlon shirt over the crossbar of a broken metal door, dragged slowly into the fire-soiled floor of an abandoned store, laundry, or candy counter, 1929. Now a series of papers and pillows, plastic car seat covers, cracked cockroach corpsed ground. My wallet, back pocket, passed over the iron footstep guard and fell out. Stole by Godmugger's lost fingers. Strange, couldn't tell. Snakeskin wallet, actually plastic. $70 my bank money for the week. Old broken wallet and dreary plastic contents. American Express card and manufacturer's Hanover Trust credit, too. Business card from Mr. Spears, British Home Minister Drug Squad. My draft card, membership in American Civil Liberties Union, Naropa Institute Instructor's Identification. Om Ah Om. I continue chanting, Om Ah Om, putting my palm on the neck of an 18-year-old boy, fingering my back pocket, crying, where's your money? Om Ah Om, there isn't any. My card, Chief Boohoo, Neo-American Church, New Jersey on the Lower East Side, Peyote. Om Ah Om, what not forgotten in the crowded wallet? Mobile, credit card, shell, old lovers' addresses on cardboard pieces, booksellers' calling cards. Shut up or we'll murder you. Om Ah Om, take it easy. Lying on the floor, shall I shout out louder? The metal door closed on blackness. One boy felt my broken-heeled ankle, looking for $100 bills behind my stocking that weren't there. A third boy untied my Seiko Hong Kong watch, rough from right wrist, leaving a clasp prick skin, tiny bruise. Shut up and we'll get out of here. And so they left as I rode from the cardboard, as I rose from the cardboard mattress thinking, oh my home, didn't stop him enough. The tone of voice was too loud. My shoulder bag with $10,000 full of poetry left on the broken floor. Went out the door, dim-eyed, bent down and picked up my glasses from the step edge where I'd placed them while being dragged in the store. Looked out, the whole street, a bombed out face, building rows, eyes and teeth missing, burnt apartments, half the long block, gutted cellars, hallways, charred beams hanging over trash plaster-mounded entrances, couches and bedsprings, rusty after sunset. Nobody home! Scattered stoopfuls of scared kids, frozen in their black hair, chatted, giggling at house doors and black shoes. Families cooked for rent, some six-story houses amid the street's wreckage. Next door, bodega, Puerto Rican grocery, a phone, the police. I just got mugged, I said to a man's face under fluorescent grocery light, tin ceiling. Puffy, eyes blank and watery, sickness of beer, kidney, and language tongue. Thick lips stunned as my own poor eyes. Oh, old drunken uncle minding the store. Hopeless city of idiots. Staring, empty-eyed, afraid. Red beam-topped car at the street curb arriving. Hey, maybe my wallet's still on the ground. You got a flashlight? Back into the burnt-doored cave and the policeman's gray flashlight. Broken. No I-beam. My partner, all he wants to do is sit in the car, never gets out. Hey, Joe, bring your big flashlight. A tiny throwaway beam, dim as a match in the criminal dark. No, I can't see anything here. Fill out this form. Neighborhood street crowd behind the car. We didn't see nothing. Stoop, young girls, kids laughing. Listen, man, last time I messed with them, see this? Rolled up his skinny arm shirt, a white knife scar on his brown shoulder. Besides, we help you, the cops come, they don't know anybody. We all get arrested, go to jail. I never help no more anybody. Mind my business every time. Ah! Up street, I think. Gee, I don't know anybody here. I've lived 10 years. Half a block away across Avenue C, and who knows who? Passing empty apartments, old lady with frayed paper bag sitting in the tin-boarded doorframe of a dead house. Peter, you want to read?
This is my first book of poems in 20 years. And if you buy a copy, I'll plant you a nut tree. You tell me what kind, and you show me where to plant it, and give me the shovel, and I'll dig the hole, we'll plant it together.
Or I'll plant you apple trees, persimmon fruit trees, or quince bushes, or mulberries, or raspberries, or blueberries, or blackberries, or jamberries. The name of the book of poems is called Clean Asshole Poems and Smiling Vegetable Songs. Whoa, it's war and time again in the army, and the sergeant sees that far away look in my eye. My 18-year-old pop beef muscle baby brain arm mind is trying to follow the Korean War reporting in the New York Times while sitting in Queens restaurants licking 1952 cream cheese counter sandwiches, and cafeteria music speaker filters down to me a coded message to jump into the orange bus to the exam center. I could lift 1,000 pounds of invisible neurotic dust cleanliness hung up, but when the sergeant and major confided me to Letterman Army Hospital barracks for failing Saturday morning inspection showing 10 dandruff flecks and 2 shreds of hair on a black comb, they took away my weekend pass, they did. I couldn't go take long weekend walks and visit artist boyfriend, big cock lover, painter, and thank you, old Byron Hunt, for talking table hopping in Polk and Sutter's Foster Street cafeteria, for introducing me to the fine pen drawing face and morning glory trumpet flowers leaf curled outlines, and my bottom lip finally sweetened by the persistent trailing eye of artist Robert Levine and our year-old romance at 1403 Gough Street. My, oh my, what a big, healthy cock he had. But I was young and strong and could take it. And the tea will seem golden. Oh, mama, where did you go? What did you do? The wine you drank when I was 14. You beat your head on the ground, and I stood nearby watching this. It's the tears I remember most. The yells forgotten, my age disappeared. I wanted you to stop. I even got mad at you. I picked you up and threw you in bed, but you kissed me goodnight. Cigarette ashes dry up your tears. I'm older now. I could put my arm around you if you were to cry again, Ma. So cry like you used to. More agony, Ma. And then we'll have a long talk afterwards. And the tea will seem golden. And we'll pat each other's bellies and tickle each other's feet. Lepers cry. When in Benares, in India, 1961 summer, I was flooded on morphine mattress, so a bit shyly fitting for me to go see how the poor, sick, weak, thin, no legs, no hands, no fingers, only stubs of joints with the finger bones poking through, a bit like pig's feet in a glass jar in a store. Only these were the lowest of the low of India, the lepers, or a fraction of the fraction in this small lane near Dasasumid Ghat, Benares. Maybe this 32-year-old woman, wrapped in pure dirt, burlap string strip around waist, where the tips of her toes should be, were her bone toe stubs protruding out, still infected with active leprosy growing by eating away the flesh that surrounds her extremities. She could only crawl on her rear. She could not walk, and to eat she has to use her rotten, sore leper fingers. I gave some helpful Indian soul to go get her a fresh, new, clean sari, a
few rupees to begin to help her change her apparel. When there to my eyes on her left behind, I saw a 4-inch ring of open sore infection full of maggots, crawling and happily alive. I was so surprised I didn't know what to do for a second. Then I hightailed it to the doctor in his office a bit across the street, asking him what to do. No, I asked him to come down and examine this street leper and that I would pay him good for his expert service. He said he had to stay in his office and he told me to get some hydrogen peroxide, cotton, and I think some sulfur ointment to first clean out the infection and kill the maybe 30 or 50 maggots in her side above the thigh. You know, that big round muscle that is divided in two spheres. Well, on her left sphere, ass played these maggots, and I poured the hydrogen peroxide. I had to turn her over on her side. The maggots became more alive and active and danced in the air. It was difficult to get all the maggots out, so after a few pourings of cotton and cleanings, I covered it with sulfur ointment of I don't remember the name because it's been 10 years ago, and I've been so scattered fingers to write this real sad tale, which is another disgusting disease in itself. And I topped it with a 5-inch by 5-inch compress pad and had someone bring her some food and a clean mat for her to sit on. For this took place in the poor beggar's sick alley, decked with watery shit plop. I finally got into the swing of finally cleaning up it up with my hands, that the first problem was to clean up all this free-floating shit splashings about. I even went to the water pipe commissioner's local office to see if they would install a water faucet at this dispensary spot, but no luck. And it was on the next day I saw her again, and this time I looked into her right side behind, and there was another maggot soup dish, big and eaten down to a thigh bone. I saw the muscles getting eaten and sucked thin, juicy human maggot pus. Have you ever smelled maggot pus? Don't do it. Keep away. Let the pros attend the nose. I didn't expect to see the same horrible infested condition on her exact opposite side of her body. I was now more surprised and taken back, and I looked into her eyes, and she had very dark olive black eyes, sweetful eyes, sad. They seemed to tell me, I'm okay. It's nice of you to have some food brought to me, and I want to thank you, but I don't know your language, so I say silently with my eyes. I gave her friends food money for a fairy diet for a week and told them to get her yogurt, and they said, and they got some and spoon fed her, and then I disappeared for a week. And in a month, I saw her again in the bigger square up above Das Assumedgat. I saw her from a distance of about 70 feet, or someone else looking like her. She was on her back in rigor mortis. I could tell by the way her knees and arms were sticking up into the air. It looked like I forgot her name. I think I forgot to ask. I started away. I could see the problem of burning her at the funeral pyre at Manikarniki Ghat. It was, I figured, the proper government worker's job. They would come and gather her up. I was sad to see her end this way. I didn't think she'd go so soon. What fooled me was her calm eyes, living so peacefully above her hip woe, her hip infection. And then I thought that maybe me, by killing the maggots, it opened the blood veins or something to cause premature death. It's all so sad, and now to this day I feel all the more dumb and lazy. Lazy bastard of a selfish human creep sleep. America, give a shit. New York City, get your shit together. You have to sit and think this thing out, Peter. How many pounds does my city shit and piss in one day? How do we scoop it up and collected and composted and brought back to the farms where it belongs all along. It's a great job, and my pay is human manure. I want £100 an hour because I'm a hard worker. Or should I ask for more? Always wanted to dig with a shovel in front our East Side Manhattan apartment. I know worm droppings are worth $15 a pound. I'll have to go study city sewage blueprints and dream of vacuum flush toilets, remembering Alan and me walking to East River around 17th Street in Manhattan, and there we saw the sewage flow out 6-foot diameter tunnel, 2 feet deep, slowly moving on its way to the East River garden floor. What interesting brown flow discovery on its way. Even cows don't throw away their plop, but let it drop near many eating pasture spots. And next year, dung turns into better green grass than before. Organic Gardening Magazine gets excited reporting China's ingenuity in recycling 99% of Shanghai's 14 million population, recycling all that 14 million human manure population, while Chinese farm girls in the fields sing odes to human dung, while raking more dried human manure under orange fruit persimmon trees, as their babies sit nearby on the ground, looking up at the clear blue sky, listening to mama's human fertilizer song.
Between when you're sitting on the green, keep it clean in your sweet between. Keep it clean night and day with cold water protein whey. Keep it clean in your sweet between.
Keep it clean in between with cold water. Keep it clean in your sweet between. Keep it clean night and day, sitting on the grass, okay. Keep it clean, but hey, hey, hey,
raspberries to grow. Does raspberries grow here? Huh? You got a raspberry bush? 2 raspberry bushes? 5? 10? How many you got?
Sweeter raspberries growing in a row, sweetest country time, feeding them raspberries to grow. Hey, sweet raspberries, what do you say? See you later grow all summer day. Early in the morning and late at night, I'm gonna pick you with my bamboo bucket. Sweetest country time down on the finger farm. If your dick was a raspberry hat on, so red hot from your head to your toe, then you'd be the sweetest Joe. I'd come in bed and suck you aglow. Sweetest country time down on the sucking farm. If your pussy was a raspberry dish, I'd come in a lick-a-tit-tish. Lick you in the morning and I lick you at night. Lick you out there in the bright daylight. Sweetest country time down on the licking farm. Oh, hurry up, Pete, plant another 50 feet. Then another 50 for the raspberry beet. Then another 50 for the raspberry street. Then another 50 for the raspberry treat. It's finger flipping time down on the finger farm. You are. Never will I forget how sweet you are. Hey, raspberries with your little red hat on. Hey, raspberries with your little red hat on. Oh, kiss first you show your little red eyes to the moon. I would love to pick you in the early morning time. Raspberry jam, sweeter than a little lamb. Raspberry jam, sweeter than a little lamb. Raspberry jam with meditation in the early morning time. Raspberry jam with meditation in the winter time. Jam with cold water in the winter time. Raspberry jam with cold water in the tub of time. Never will I forget how sweet you are.
Okay, I'm afraid that's all, but would you give another round of thanks to Allen Ginsberg, Peter Orlovsky, and Stephen Taylor?